Welcome to Dark Materials. I'm Faye. Hi.
And I'm Rachel. Hello.
This is a podcast where we're reading through and discussing Philip Pullman's His Dark Materials novels, a chapter at a time, spoiler free.
In this episode, we are talking about chapter 28 of The Amber Spyglass, Midnight.
Hello, here we are in this lovely, lovely, glorious Asriel-filled chapter.
Oh, it's very Asriel heavy, isn't it?
It is. I struggled, I'm not going to lie. I was a bit like, oh, God. I tried to find, like, the little bits of, like, humour and stuff that we can have any interest in. It's like, the humour and the anger are the two main things for me this episode, I think.
Mm-hmm. A lot of one, a little bit less of the other.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of, like, what's been going on with us, not much. I mean, you've had markets and stuff. I've done nothing.
Yes. Yeah, I did. I've just did the Satanic Flea Market last weekend. And on the 15th of July, I will be doing a market in Leeds. And it's not often that I have... Well, it's not often that I do markets up north, but it will be more and more often increasingly so now that I live here. So yes, I'm doing a little market in Leeds. It's a spooky market called the Half Moon Market, and it should be really fun. And Faye's going to help me. So
yes.
Yeah,
I will be there.
If you're a northern ally, cause come and see us in Leeds.
Yes, do it. It's at the Key Club in Leeds. And we went to it when it was last on there to kind of like scope it out. And it's great. I loved it.
Yeah, it was good vibes. I bought some really cool spooky stuff. I bought reptile socks. They were really cool.
Yeah. Yeah,
not exactly spooky, but that fluorescent green. I don't know when I'm going to wear them because they're so green.
Oh,
but they will
great,
definitely
though.
Cheer me up over the winter.
I bought a clitoris curing, which I found the other day, by the way, because it fell off my key somewhere. It was in crevice of my driver's seat in my car. Just been sat on it for like weeks.
Hidden from you in your car, just like how it's been hidden from most men for millennia.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. But yeah, come and see us if you're up north and in the Leeds area.
Yeah, yes, yes, yes.
But like, my memory is terrible. I can't actually remember what I've done since we recorded. Oh my God, I went to see Origami Angel. They were amazing.
Of course you did, yes.
Yeah, they were one of my favourite bands and they were so good. And they're just so lovely and grateful. And it was really nice. It was our first time in the UK, so it was nice. They were like, oh my God, both bands, because there was another band that played called Prince Daddy and the Hyena, and they were really good as well. But both bands were like, oh, do you know what I really love about the UK is that you sing the riff? Because like, everyone was like singing the riffs.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And they were like, this is just so cool. And I was like, yay. And like everyone was like crowd surfing. And somebody got up on the stage. Obviously, you've been to Key Club. You know the stage is really small. There's only two people in Origami Angel. And there's a guitarist and a drummer. So the guitarist has like loads of pedals because they have to fill out the sound somehow.
Mm.
And somebody crowd surfed and tripped over one of his wires and pulled out the wire. So the guitar had just gone and he was like, bear with us, bear with us. And he was like, he was so sweet about like saying it, but he was like, oh, I didn't know that leads would go this heavy. I would have put my wires like round the back. And then he was like, oh, like we love it when you crowd surf, but maybe you can like come on, because it was like a spare bit of the stage where no one was because there's only two of them. He was like, maybe you could go to this side. And I was like, oh.
Please, friends.
Yeah.
I'm only small. Be gentle.
Yeah, yeah. But it was great. Oh, I fucking loved
it. It looked like a really bouncy gig from the videos that you shared. I'm kind of sad that I couldn't go. But alas, I had to go and do my craft stuff.
Yeah. They said they'll be back. So
yeah, that would be good
to see them then. But yeah, they're great. I love them.
I saw three owls last week, Faye.
No,
that's the thing
didn't.
That I have to share. I was very excited about it. I made direct eye contact with a barn owl.
And you were cursed.
Potentially it cursed me. And then I saw two like little, they were either little owls or brown owls. I think they were little owls because they were small. But I think then I got uncursed and then recursed. And then you just see another owl to like even out the numbers to be fully uncursed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because yeah, I then had like a series of unfortunate events occur immediately after seeing the owl. And I was like, oh no, I thought, I was like, it's either a blessing or a curse. It turned out to be a curse.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I would have thought the owls would be on your side.
I would have hoped so. Maybe I needed to say something like nicer. I did tell it was beautiful as it swooped past. Maybe it just wasn't into that kind of compliment.
Maybe it was like, I don't like it when people catcall me, actually.
Oh no, I catcalled an owl.
One very important thing that we have to tell people. Well, there's two very important things. Firstly, a new patron shout out to Scarlett. Thank you, Scarlett.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. Thanks, Scarlett.
Yeah, thanks so much. We really appreciate it. Everyone on Patreon is just fucking great. And it's so nice to have this little community. So yeah, thank you so much for pledging. And the other thing is that we have new merch.
Come and buy our merch. It's not new merch if I don't sing the song now.
True.
We have two brand new t-shirt designs. Well, one design, two colours. I drew some cool artwork based on the symbols of the like hero props for each book. So you've got an alethiometer, the subtle knife, and the amber spyglass. And it looks pretty, and it's kind of across the front of the shirt. It's really nice. And we've got that on a black shirt or on a white shirt. And then, first time ever, new merch.
Yes.
Not t-shirt merch. Yes. Not even sticker merch.
Yes.
We've got mugs.
Yes.
Yes. And we've also got to-do list pads.
Yes.
That
yes.
say, keep making lists and all will be well.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. Honestly, I love the new merch so much, especially the mugs. The mugs came out so well. They're so
I'm
nice.
Really happy with them. They're really nice. They've got so the mug is white, but the inside of the mug and the handle are black, and so it looks really like sleek. And then they've got, it's got the symbols design around the side, so oh, lovely.
We have posted about it on our socials, so you can head over to our Instagram, which is at HGMPod, and Twitter to have a look. But also you can go on to hgmpod.co.uk/shop. And yeah, buy some merch if you so wish.
Yes, yes, yes. So exciting.
I will say that the mugs have been selling really well and we're almost out of them. So if you want a mug, make sure you do it sooner rather than later. We probably will order some more, but we don't know how long that's going to take. So yeah, get in there.
Hey, Faye.
Hi.
Hi. What would your demon have been this week?
So this is how bad my memory is at the minute. I wrote these notes like maybe 3 hours ago. I've already forgotten. Let me see. Oh, yeah. Okay. So I went with a rabbit, just a little pet rabbit. What are you, just your average little pet rabbit. Because I've been into a couple of pet shops recently just because they happened to be around where I was already shopping. And I always go in because I like to look at the cute animals that they have.
A therapeutic look at a guinea pig for like 20 minutes. Yes.
Yes, exactly. And they had some super cute rabbits. And then it made me think of our friend Matt. His mum has a rabbit that will stare.
It's so cute.
It's so cute, but it stares into your soul. And I have been noticing more often recently, I don't know why, if you know me as an actual human being in real life and you've met me, you know that I have resting bitch face. Which I can't help, it's just how my face is. Recently, people have been asking me if I'm okay or if I'm mad at stuff, and I'm like, it's just my face. I can't help it. I chose a rabbit because they also kind of have resting bitch face, and I was like, it can take my resting bitch face from me and have it so I can have a face that actually shows emotion, I guess.
You don't need a face that shows. I mean, resting bitch face was made up to tell women to smile more, and I don't like
True.
It. Yeah, it's just resting face. Resting face, but like if you want your like resting face to be like somewhat like Luna Lovegood half smile expression, you can go for that. Like resting starry eyed gaze face is a thing.
It's hard though, isn't it, to like change how you rest your face. Yeah. I think it's funny because like I've said all this about my demon just because I thought it was funny more than anything. I actually quite like having, I mean, for want of a, hopefully there's a better phrase out there than resting bitch face, but I actually quite like it because it makes my face quite unreadable and also stops people approaching me on the street. Like when I used to live in Streatham and I used to live with our friend Zach, there'd be times when we'd both be walking up the high street at the same time but like in opposite directions, and we'd walk past each other and he'd be like, oh, you've got your fucking don't talk to me face on.
Stomping
like,
face.
Yeah. I'm like, it's just my face. But also good, because I don't want random men to talk to me in the street, which is what it always ends up being.
Yeah.
So if you ever see me out and about and you want to come and say hello, please do. I promise you, it's just my face. I'm not pissed off. Or if I am, I'm not pissed off at whoever it might be that wants to come and talk to me, unless you're a creepy man.
Yes. Love that. Also, because I've just rewatched Yellow Jackets, I feel like Rabbit is super appropriate for that as well because
yeah.
of Jackie and the Rabbits.
Not snacky.
Oh, no.
Oh, God. God, it's such a batshit series. Anyway, what would your demon be this week?
Well, I wasn't entirely sure. And then I remembered that I saw three owls this week. So yes. I think the universe has spoken and it has to be. I'm going to go with the barn owl because I just really love their like toasted marshmallow kind of colour. How they're like white and then just like a little bit toasty on the top.
Is this you putting out into the world to reverse your curse?
Yes, please. If the owls could uncurse me because I've chosen them to be my demon, that would be nice. I would like to no longer constantly forget everything and have to do like all of my tasks at least twice because I keep doing them wrong, which is basically what the curse has been. And I'm like, is that an owl curse or is that just me being stressed? We'll find out.
Yeah, we can put it down to the owl curse. Why not?
Yeah. Everybody, like, cross your fingers or touch wood or something and try and get the owl to uncurse me, please.
Yes.
And I will make it my honorary demon for the week as a way to try and placate the owl gods.
You'll have to let us know in the next episode whether it worked or not.
Mm-hmm. I can send you my very grainy photos of the owls that I saw to post on socials if you want.
I have those somewhere.
On our Instagram stories.
Oh, I already have them, don't worry. I already have them.
Of course. I sent Faye a voice note immediately like, oh my God, I just made eye contact with an owl.
That was really funny because she sent that to me and Matt and we were both just sat there like, this is a classic Rich voice note if I've ever heard one.
Yes. Yeah. I was just having a very whimsical day. Just walking the dog through the hills and yet seeing an owl.
Yeah. Very nice. Whimsical. Mm-hmm. Okay, shall we get into this chapter?
Yes, let's do it.
Last chapter, the Malefa built Mary a platform so she could figure out why dust is floating away.
She had an out-of-body experience that brought her closer to the answer.
Father Gomez, stepped through a window into the Malefa world and met the Tualapi, aka the stupid bastard birds. In this chapter, Mrs. Coulter learns that Lyra isn't dead and Azrael learns that Lyra is important.
They discover a mountain in the clouds that has something to do with the authority.
And here we are.
And here we are.
Here we are.
In a very Azrael-heavy chapter.
Yeah.
Are we feeling ready? No.
No. But we'll get through it. We'll get through it. Would you like to guess? See, I haven't forgotten this week. Would you like to guess what the picture is?
Ooh, is it the clouded mountain? Like a little triangly looking cloud?
It isn't. Would you like another guess or would you like me to just tell you? I don't know if you'll guess it.
Is it a map on a table?
No. Interestingly, it is a pistol.
Oh, yeah. That confused me.
Me too.
That entire little bit. We'll get there.
Yeah, me too. I have many questions.
Feels like it's supposed to be super significant, but I don't know what's happening.
Yeah. Okay, so the quote, I really like this one because I feel it.
Yes.
Anyway, tell me about it. I don't want to steal your thunder.
The quote is, "For many a time, I have been half in love with easeful death." And it is from the poem Ode to a Nightingale by John Keats, which, if we pay attention to the chapter, somebody later in the chapter has a nightingale demon. And
yeah,
I think Phil knew exactly what he was doing there. Very cute. So it's quite a long poem. So I'm just going to read out for now the stanza that the actual quote is from for like a little bit more context either side of it. "Darkling, I listen, and for many a time I have been half in love with easeful death, called him soft names in many amused rhyme, to take into the air my quiet breath. Now more than ever it seems rich to die, to cease upon the midnight with no pain. While thou art pouring forth thy soul abroad in such ecstasy, still that's what sing, and I would have ears in vain to thy high requiem become a sod." It's a very thy-y poem. Like thines and thys all around. I'm going to give you the context of the wider poem, which is that the general vibe of the poem is that it's about like the transience of beauty mm-hmm. and how part of being human is knowing that nothing beautiful can last and that we will all suffer and die and suffer through our own knowledge of our own mortality. This is a thought that the like voice of the poem comes to while watching a nightingale sing and having a thought of like initially the poem's really beautiful and like joyful about the beauty of the nightingale and how pretty it is and how it's so lovely, but the fact that the nightingale is like the song is so joyful is kind of partly because the nightingale doesn't understand its own mortality. And so it's kind of like an envy of the nightingale in that sense of just being a beautiful thing that exists and is happy and can sing, and that also in some ways is immortal because nightingales are known for their iconic song. And so despite being a tiny fleeting life, it's immortal in its beauty and people's appreciation of its beauty. So it's like it lives in ignorance and therefore bliss, but lives on immortally through its beauty, blah 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 blah. So yeah, basically someone's looking up into a tree at a nightingale and having some very existential thoughts about life and death because this bird is so pretty and its song is so pretty, but also we're all gonna die. And life is pain.
Yeah, absolutely. It made me, I mean, I don't know what it brought up for you in this chapter, but for me it brought up thoughts. Obviously I'd only read the quote that we have, but even when you've kind of explained it, it just brings me to the bit with Coulter talking to Asriel about isn't being tortured better than being in the abyss forever and ever and not feeling anything, and like they're starting to talk about death and things like that, and it just really made me think of that bit of the chapter for sure.
It gets very like concept heavy at that point, for sure. Would you like any background info on the poet, who is John Keats?
We've had him before, haven't we?
Potentially, but I don't feel like I remember reading some of the info that I've got on my list here.
Okay, well so, then yes.
Keats was born in 1795 and died in 1821, which means he died at the fairly young age of 25 of tuberculosis.
Oh no.
Which is the same thing that killed his mum when he was 14.
God.
And his dad died when he was 8 from falling off a horse.
Oh my God. So tragedy.
Is no wonder that Keats writes songs that are very melancholy, pondering the nature of life and death, especially when he's gone through like such intense stuff at such a young age. He trained to be a surgeon. So his like generation of poets is kind of the same age as like Lord Byron and Mary and Percy Shelley and that kind of vibe. And his poems had been in publication for less than 4 years when he died. So he'd only been doing the poetry thing for 4 years. Before that, he was training to be a surgeon. And he had reached the point where he was assisting in surgeries at Guy's Hospital. And he got his apothecary/surgery license at age 19.
Oof.
Which is wild. Like, think about how young people are when they're starting being surgeons in that time period.
Wow.
Wild. He was like, fuck that. I want to be a poet. I want to pursue my passion of being a poet. And so he quit medicine to go and be a poet, which is such a vibe. And another fact that I enjoy about him is that when he found out he had TB and knew that he was going to die, he was like, fuck it. I've never been to Rome. I really want to go to Rome. And just went and lived out the last month of his life in Italy.
Wait, is TB contagious?
Yes. Yeah.
Just spreading that round. Spreading it around Rome.
Just
Why
take
not?
It to Italy, yeah. I think it's contagious for a certain period of time. I'm not sure. It's what she has in Moulin Rouge.
Oh, yeah.
And it's what was often known as like the wasting disease. It's a very Victorian disease to have. It was consumption, right? I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think so, yeah. Interesting. Yeah, because like we had our like jabs at school, didn't we?
I don't think they do them anymore. I think they consider it like eradicated enough that they don't vaccinate against it anymore, which is
Did you have like the little 6 needles in your arm and then like the big one? And people like, I know a lot of people have still got like scars from it. I don't know if I have.
Yeah, I still got one this year.
It's so interesting though, right? How does it scar? Because it's just a needle.
Because quite often it blows up and we're all teenagers that are horrible and pick scabs.
True. True. I remember that one being the most painful one as well.
And that it was a thing that everyone for that whole week at school, everyone would go around and you'd be like, don't punch me. Don't punch me in the arm. Don't punch me.
Yeah. Okay. Should we get into this chapter?
Yeah.
Or do you have any
it.
More information about Keats? Because that was, I did enjoy the story of Keats. And I think you're right. I don't think we've talked about him before.
That was kind of all, that was my like greatest hits, most interesting points, which is terrible. My most interesting points about him are that his parents both died when he was really young. But I felt like it was really relevant to the poem and also this chapter because it's so the nature of life and death heavy that it felt pretty relevant.
For sure.
Yeah, so without further ado, let's talk about Lord Asriel.
Yay, our favourite thing to do. Woo.
Yeah, when a chapter starts with the words, Lord Asriel said, kind of want to tune out, which is terrible.
Yeah, same. It was a struggle. So Asriel wakes up Colter because they're about to land back at the, like, where the Adamant Tower is and all that kind of stuff. She hasn't been asleep. And then I had a question because the TV show has intercepted my thoughts about these chapters because it just has, because we watched the TV show so many times and we stopped doing the book chapters. Is this the first we're seeing of Zephania, or have we seen her before?
We met her the first time that Mrs. Colter was at the Adamant Tower. She was in the war room meeting with King Ogunwe and Lord Roke and Asriel, I believe.
Okay, so Zephania's here. Right, I have a theory in this chapter that Asriel and Ogunwe have got something going on.
Oh, I wrote down some tension.
Yeah.
Some tension right there. He says the word flesh far too enthusiastically for it not to be anything. And he holds his face while speaking to him for a really long time.
Mm-hmm. So as soon as they land, it starts immediately. Asriel runs straight to Ogunwe. He just runs. He has to be there. He can't
wait to see my baby. Yes.
Oh God. He like ignores Mrs. Colter, like everybody ignores Mrs. Colter, like what the fuck. At least that the really nice orderly sees her there and he asks her if she wants some food. And the thing here is Mrs. Colter now seems to have completely lost the manipulative side of herself. Like when she's talking to this orderly, it in no way reads of her being manipulative. She's just being nice to the orderly. She's nice to the alethiometrist. She just seems to have potentially even outgrown that side of herself with everything that she's like discovered about her love for Lyra.
Mm. I read some of this, especially the way that she feels a bit invisible, the way that she's immediately ignored. She's ignored a lot this chapter. That word keeps coming up.
Yeah.
And the way that she's just, at least the first half of the chapter, she just kind of exists through the chapter.
Yeah.
And I read that as like the shock and the grief spiral, because it only seems to start dissipating when she finds out that Lyra survived.
Yeah.
Because up until this point, Asriel is just not giving her any information. She thinks her child is dead. It's wild that he's ignoring her when he can clearly see that she thinks their child is dead.
Yeah.
And so the way that like her response to do you want any food is just whatever you have.
Yeah.
And like asking to see the alethiometrist but being like, oh, there's no hurry. Like I feel like she's just like numb to everything.
Even after she finds out that Lyra's still alive, even in that last bit where that we'll get to obviously, but where everyone's in the room and she's not and she's asleep in Asriel's bed, that's like usually something that she would be like, no, I'm going to be in on this. Like, I want to know what's happening. Mm-hmm. But there's like, she's just like, she don't give a shit. She's just like, oh, I'm
she's
fine.
Done.
Yeah.
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 I just want her to have some good sleep. She just doesn't get any good sleep. And it frequently says like how tired she is. And then every time she lays down, she's not sleeping. I'm like, girl, please go to sleep.
She needs a good book. She needs a good book to read and fall asleep to. Or like an average book, actually, because a good book will keep you up.
Yeah.
She needs an average book to read.
Yes, exactly. So I am on my like Asriel and Ogunwe bullshit. And it really made me laugh when Asriel says, what do you make of that, King? And I read it in a like, oh my God, King. Yeah, like, what do you make of that? In a like very online kind of greeting for someone rather than an actual king.
Yes.
Actual royalty. So that made me laugh. I was like, oh my God, king, what do you think of that?
Yes, I feel like you've raced ahead just a scooch because we have a little exposition-y bit of Coulter finding out exactly what's happening with Lyra.
We do.
That I just want to run through with this new alethiometrist, who is the man with the Nightingale demon.
Yes.
Which is nicely tied together by Phil with the quote. Mm-hmm. But it's just interesting that he has obviously been told by Azrael to be following Lyra's footsteps.
Yes.
Because we know that Lyra's the only one that can read the alethiometer fast.
Yeah.
Everyone else, it takes a lot of study. So the fact that he can come to Mrs. Coulter with an answer this like the same day, probably less than 24 hours after the bomb has gone off, knowing that Lyra's okay, means he's been like working on it this entire time.
True.
And the alethiometer has given such information, I found really interesting, in terms of being like, they're in the world of the dead, but they're not dead. They've let the ghosts out. Ghosts dissolve into dust. All of this kind of stuff. And what I found weird is that the alethiometer tells me that the girl did this because she overheard a prophecy that there would come an end to death and that she thought that this was a task for her to accomplish. As a result, there is now a way out of the world of the dead. And I was like, that's not why she did it. She didn't do it because she heard there was a prophecy about herself. She did it because she thought it would be a nice thing to do for, like, Roger and all the sad ghosts.
Yeah, I also thought that when I read it. I was like, is that why she did it? And I don't think
she really knew a ton about the prophecy. No. Or at least I don't remember that she did.
The whole thing about the prophecy was more of the bit, I mean, what we picked up on anyway, was more about the betrayal, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And that she was important and that she would do something that it was really important, but I was like, I don't remember.
And I think a lot of the point of the prophecy was that she would do these important things while not knowing what she was doing.
Yes.
So, exactly. Like, I feel like maybe, I don't know, it feels a little bit like attributing some Azraelisms to Azrael's child in terms of, like, Azrael is the kind of guy that would be like, yeah, I heard this, there was a prophecy that someone would take down the authority and I decided it was my destiny. And it's like, oh, Azrael's kid heard a prophecy that someone would end death and decided it was her destiny. Like, kind
also,
of thing.
Yeah, for sure. And also, I guess we could maybe take it with a pinch of salt as well, because we know how difficult the alethiometer is to read if you don't have the gift like Lyra. Maybe he's just got it skewed a little bit and read it a little bit wrong.
Yeah, or like he's heard the witch's prophecy and put it together with the alethiometer reading and gone, I've decided that A plus B equals C.
Because I can't imagine the alethiometer like giving all that information. Whenever we've seen Lyra read it, it's like, yes, no, like that kind of stuff. Not like a, well, sit down and I'll spin you a yarn.
Yeah. It's a very chatty alethiometer. Yeah. But also when Mrs. Coulter, I love the way that she's asking the questions. She's so clear and she's so, like, she's very direct about what she wants, but she also seems so hesitant and you can tell it's because she cares.
Yeah.
We're seeing Mrs. Coulter, like, stutter or stumble over her words for the first time.
Yeah.
And when she's asking, like, how is Lyra? How is she? What a great response. She is suffering. She is in pain. She is afraid. But she has the companionship of the boy and the two Galavespian spies and they're all together. It's like...
just every day.
Just say she's fine.
Yeah.
She's not exactly reassuring.
Yeah.
How is my baby? She's suffering. She's in pain.
She is suffering, actually. Like, just tell me she's fine.
Yeah. It's fine. The bomb didn't hurt her. And Coulter is like, oh, thank goodness. And then she wants nothing more than a lie down and to sleep. And
that's
then
what
she can't sleep.
She needs bloody sleep, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I did skip ahead that. Now we get to the mountain. They can see Azrael and Gunwe, just two guys hanging out.
With their telescopes in hand, just checking out the landscape as you do.
Yeah. So, he was looking through the watchtower telescope at something in the western sky. It had the appearance of a mountain hanging in the sky a hand's breadth above the horizon and covered in cloud. It was a very long way off, so far, in fact, that it was no bigger than a thumbnail held out at arm's length. But it had not been there for long, and it hung there absolutely still. So interesting. There's just this, like, mountain in the sky, and they keep having a little look at it. They notice that, like, something's coming out of it. It turns out to be, like, a shitload of angels just flying around. And I just had a note. We do get some exposition here from Asriel about Metatron and all that kind of stuff. So I will read that also. With the Regent at the reins, he's concealed himself well, this Metatron. They speak of him in the apocryphal. Did I say that right?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Apocryphal scriptures. He was a man once, a man called Enoch, the son of Jared, six generations away from Adam, and now he rules the kingdom. And he's intending to do more than that if that angel they found by the Sulphur Lake was correct, the one who entered the clouded mountain to spy. If he wins this battle, he intends to intervene directly in human life. Imagine that, a gunway, a permanent inquisition, worse than anything the consistorial court of discipline could dream up, staffed by spies and traitors in every world and directed personally by the intelligence that's keeping that mountain aloft. The old authority at least had the grace to withdraw. The dirty work of burning heretics and hanging witches was left to his priests. This one will be far, far worse. Absolutely love the blasphemy there from Phil, just being like, well, the old god just let the priests do it. And we're like, oh, that sounds familiar.
Yes. Yeah, very, this is the mission. This is what we're saving us from. I had a moment where I was wondering if the angel that they found by the Sulphur Lake was sweet baby Baruk. But I don't know if it was, because I don't think he spied inside the mountain, did he?
No.
But at one point I was like, use his goddamn name. And then I was like, oh, it's okay. I don't think it's him. It's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we ever heard of him doing that anyway.
No. But yeah, we kind of knew some of the fact that Metatron used to be a man called Enoch, mm-hmm. because we had a little bit of that from Balthamos and Baruk telling Lyra and Will, I believe, or at least Will. And yeah, interesting, very, oh, look, the seat of power itself is going to start getting involved in human affairs in a way that it never has before. That is like, ugh.
Yeah.
Not fun.
I think part of the reason why I didn't particularly love this chapter, one of them is obviously Asriel. The other one was just like the description of the clouded mountain. I was like, okay, I get it. It's a fucking clouded mountain. Do you know what I mean? Like, and the stuff coming out of it, and sometimes the cloud moves and you can see a little bit of it and all this kind of stuff. I'm like, get on with it.
And oh, look, it's not just a mountain. It's got guns. And oh, look, it's not just got angels fighting for it. It's got other things. There's a lot of, it's very much laying the scene for the fact that the next chapter is called The Battle on the Plain, I believe. Yes. So it's very much laying the scene for the battle and being like, here is the enemy. Here is the war room description of all this kind of stuff. And I just don't like tactical things, war kind of things, they're not what drives me to read a story.
Yeah,
and so it's not like a lot of this exposition about, or just information about what's happening here with the clouded mountain, and is just so that we understand how big of a threat it is. And it's like, cool. Yeah, I guess just saying it was massive and scary and full of guns and angels doesn't quite have the same literary.
Guns and angels. Sounds like a motorcycle gang.
Yeah, guns and angels. Or one of the new bands for the t-shirt.
Yes.
Like Guns and Roses, but Guns and Angels.
Guns and Angels, yes. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I completely agree with you. And then we get this bit that I can really, really, really imagine James McAvoy doing really well in the series. The bit where, and again, this leads us to, again, thinking that Asriel and Gunway are probably fucking, where he like grabs his arm so hard and he's like, they don't have this though, do they? They don't have flesh. We're human, all this like fucking shit. And then he touches his face and it's a whole thing. I'm like, okay, calm down, Asriel. Jesus.
Because Asriel's kind of gone, we'll beat him. And Gunway's like, you're looking at literally millions of angels.
Yeah.
Why are you so confident? And then, Asriel has his little, because I'm a big, strong man and I'm going to grip your arm firmly and then gently hold your face while I talk about how strong and fleshy we all are.
Yes, I think it's the italics in that paragraph that really make me feel like James McAvoy could do like a really good performance of it. So it's like, they haven't got this, they haven't got flesh. It's like, in comparison with them, we're still stronger. They envy us a gunway. And I could really imagine like James McAvoy just loving, like putting the emphasis on those like particular words.
Yes. Yeah. And also at no point does it say that he removes his hand from his friend's
just
cheek.
Still there.
So it's quite a long paragraph. And I love that I'm picturing his hand, him like cupping a gunway's face, but all the way up until like the next, like when a gunway interjects with his next bit of speech, it's quite a long time to be holding your friend's face, like
really
direct
is.
Eye contact the whole time as well.
Yeah. So let's get into this next bit, because this is a bit that pissed me off the most in this chapter, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So Agunwe says, "And suppose he sent those angels to look for your daughter." "My daughter," cried Lord Asriel, exulting. "Isn't it something to bring a child like that into the world? You'd think it was enough to go alone to the king of the armored bears and trick his kingdom out of his paws, but to go down into the world of the dead and calmly let them all out? And that boy, I want to meet that boy. I want to shake his hand. Did we know that we were taking, did we know what we were taking on when we started this rebellion? No. But did they know, the authority in his regent, this Metatron, did they know what they were taking on when my daughter got involved?" We can all, right. Obviously, we're going to say the usual stuff of, fuck you, Asriel, you've never given a shit about Lyra in your entire life. Now that you know that she's important, now you suddenly give a shit and you want to brag about her. Hate it. The other thing that I wanted to call out is that he says that he wants to shake Will's hand. Why does he not want to shake Lyra's hand? Why does he not want to offer any kind of like physical affirmation to Lyra, his daughter? He doesn't say like, oh, he's like, I want to shake that boy's hand. It's like, well, you, for one, you don't know Will. Obviously, Will has done so much and we love and appreciate Will. He doesn't know Will. Like, but he goes straight for Will instead of being like, oh, I'd love to give my daughter a handshake as well, or a hug or something.
I feel like it's because he already feels he has an ownership over Lyra and her actions, and he wants allyship with Will because it's someone who is not under his, in his head, his direct sphere of influence. Obviously, we know that Lyra doesn't give a shit about Asriel's sphere of influence, but Asriel views him as, views her as his, whereas Will is not his or allied to him or like, you know, he hasn't like sworn fealty to Asriel's cause or anything. So I wonder if he's like, I want to shake that man's hand and make him my ally.
Yeah.
As opposed to just my, because she, you know, my daughter, she's already mine.
Yeah.
True. So he probably doesn't feel that, which is disgusting.
Yeah. The other thing that got me, which we've like said, we've kind of said like all along, but I feel like it's really highlighted in this particular paragraph. He now has an affinity for Lyra, is proud of Lyra, it seems, wants to brag about Lyra because she's doing this amazing thing for the world. But what if she wasn't? What if she was just like your average teenage girl? Does she not also deserve like a dad that's proud of her and a dad that wants to like shout about her achievements, like no matter what they are? Like, it just really fucking highlights what a piece of shit he is.
Truly. Like, the only credit I can give him is that he is willing to kind of admit and stand behind the idea that his entire rebellion, unbeknownst to him, has been in support of her.
Yeah.
And, like, there is a moment of him, like, not feeling like the main character and understanding that he's a supporting cast, especially when they find out about the demons. That I'm like willing, I'm willing to give him that.
Yeah,
it's like, because he could refuse that and just be like, we're going to go and have this big fight and she's being independent and doing her thing and like kind of not step up to that supporting role that he needs to step up to.
Yeah,
and I'm glad he does that, but he could be less of a dick about it.
For sure. No, yeah, definitely. I totally agree. The fact that he just knows not to step aside because they still need to help her, but the fact that he's so immediately like, yes, okay, this is the goal now and we will do like whatever we can to help is, yeah, the only credit that I will give Asriel ever. Yeah, so he asks for the alethiometrist to come back and doesn't give a shit that he needs a rest. He's just like, well,
he should have rested fucking before. When? What do you mean before? You probably gave him a job to do before.
Yeah. Also, the bit here with the Galavespian called, I'm going to say Oxenteal? Oxen?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Should we call it, I was going to say, should we call it Oxy? But no, that's a euphemism for a drug. So no. We've got Tally, Sally and Oxy. No.
But Madam Ox. Madam Ox. Why not?
Madam Ox. Sure.
So she is second in command. So she will take over from Rook. The fact that Asriel is so willing to go to Madam Ox and say, oh, my condolences, sorry about Rook. How about saying that to fucking Mrs. Coulter, who like 10 minutes ago thought your child was dead? Like, why is he like so nice and courteous to like anyone that's not his family?
Truly wild. I was trying to figure out in this chapter whether Asriel also finds out this chapter that Lyra is alive, or if he already knew and knew the entire time they were in the intention craft and just was not the one to tell Coulter that she was alive.
Yeah.
Because if he had the information, was witnessing her grief and was withholding it, that is like beyond the pale.
Yeah.
But if he also only just found out this chapter, why don't we get to see his relief when we find out she's alive? Why don't we get any of that? We don't get him receiving the news.
No.
So did he already know when he just didn't tell her?
Honestly. Either way, he's still an arsehole. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, none of them are good outcomes.
Yeah, none of them are great.
No. So we learn that he's assembling his army. He has, like, angels that are trying to see into the clouded mountain, but nothing's changed. They're ready for battle. The bears are here and the king. I wonder who the king is. Is it Yorick? He's not mentioned by name, but I hope it is.
King of the bears, yeah. King of the bears. Yes.
And some witches too. Mm-hmm. So everyone's come in and to help. And then at midnight in the tower, they're having a convo. They're all having a convo, apart from Mrs. Coulter, who's in bed. She said, no, thank you. I don't care about this shit.
She's in Asriel's bed.
She is in Asriel's bed. Yes, she is in Asriel's bed. I had a note. Let me turn my page. So I was wondering here about her being in Asriel's bed. Mm-hmm. Coulter in Asriel's bed is interesting, and obviously it was done very deliberately by Phil, because this is one of the first ever times that we see a little bit of humanity between Coulter and Asriel towards the end of this chapter, and that Phil is clearly bringing them together for a reason. So maybe pop a pin in that. But her being in Asriel's bed, I think, is very, very important, because all the other times she's been anywhere near Asriel, she's been in like a cell or like another room or something.
Mm-hmm. All the other times he's been very proper with her and been treating mm-hmm. her like a, well, prisoner of war, I guess, or like a, not so much that as a, I guess, like a kind of hostage vibes, because he has been mistrustful of her because of her links to the Magisterium. Like, he's been treating her as like a, as a captive, but and therefore in a somewhat respectful, professional way.
Yeah.
Whereas being in his bed ain't no professional about it.
Not. No, it isn't.
But again, with the way he's treated her this chapter, like, we have not had a reason for her to want to be in his bed, because he has withheld the information from her that her child has been alive this whole time that she's been basically grieving.
Yeah.
Like, why are you there? Like, I get it as well. He is the closest living link to her child that she has access to. I can see why she would want to be close to him in order to want to feel close to Lyra, but I don't. He's not a person that you would go to for comfort.
Absolutely not. Jesus Christ. I did enjoy... I do enjoy to see him pale and trembling, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Love that. Mm-hmm. Love that. And he offers the alethiometrist some wine. Again, just another like example of him being nice to people that are not his immediate family. Like, God, who hurt you, Asriel? Come on.
I mean, I do like to see when people are good hosts, I guess.
No, me too. Like, I like to see it. It's great for the other people. But it just makes me angry on behalf of his own family, I guess. Yeah. Also, I did have a note here that's like a Gunway. Of course a Gunway steps in to help him pour his wine, you know? Mm-hmm, Daddy's mm-hmm. always there.
Do you think they're like just brush hands as they're both like reaching for the bottle? Like,
do you think a Gunway is livid that Mrs. Coulter's in Asriel's bed tonight?
He did accuse her of having womanly wiles in like the chapter when she was first in the Adamant Tower, didn't he? Maybe that's why he was a little bit sus of her, because he was like, I know you, Asriel. I know that you're a fickle man.
Yeah. He's just jelly that she's come back, and he's like, no, we were developing a really nice relationship, and then you have to come back and ruin it.
Exactly. But yes, we found out that, well, Asriel has found out mm-hmm. that the kids are separated from their demons, and that the demons are in his world right now, and also that Metatron and his angels will be intent on capturing the demons, and that if they capture the demons, the children will have to follow, and if he can control the children, the future is his forever. So he says our task is clearer. We have to find the demons before he does. Mm-hmm. Keep them safe until the girl and the boy can rejoin them. I like it that he's like, yes, new mission. Yes. On board.
Absolutely. Is this the first that we've heard of Will having an actual physical demon? Because we know that when they went to the land of the dead, something was taken from Will as well. This is the first,
yes,
right? Again, the TV show may have infiltrated my brain and I can't, we took such a big break that I can't actually remember. But I think this might be the first time that we hear that Will has a physical demon.
Yeah, I mean, this is not the first time and it will not be the last time that your humble podcast host memories will be the fault of us all. But
please please tell us if we're wrong.
Don't believe that it's been like spelled out for us that there are two demons on the loose and it's not just something of Will's that's nebulous. It is a demon. And they're cats.
They're cats at the minute. They're cats. It's very cute. It's very cute. Ugh. God.
Yes. Madame Oxenthal sends out the Galavespians. Well, her job is to send out as many of her spies as she can to find them. Keep the kids alive, keep them out of Metatron's hands. Great. Yeah. Love it.
Yeah. Zephania spills the Metatron tea.
Yes.
She's like, he will fight you. He will get in a physical fight with you, 100%.
Yeah, because I guess Asriel, he was so adamant about all the flesh stuff earlier that it's interesting to find out that Metatron is a more substance-heavy angel than a lot of the other angels, that he could be any angel in a fight and seems to relish a fight, seems to be able to be baited. Potentially, which is interesting. And there's a definite quote where Asriel gets like, a few times through this conversation, he gets like a look in his eyes or he pauses and appears to be thinking.
Yeah. And do you love that this first one, a Gunwear can tell?
Oh, yes. Like... I know my man. I know when he's hatching a plan.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So you can tell that, a Gunwear can tell that Asriel's got his thinking cap on. Mm-hmm. We then learn that the bomb that created the abyss has also like fractured the structure of basically all of the worlds. So there's like cracks and stuff appearing everywhere. And he asks Zephania to go and find the edge because he's like, there's got to be an edge to it somewhere. Go and find the edge of this abyss. And that is definitely something to pop a little pin into.
Yes, we need to find a part of the abyss that exists in Asriel's world.
Yeah.
Good to know. Again, what are you going to do? Said King Agunway harshly. And Asriel proclaims, as he is wont to do, I'm going to destroy Metatron, but my part is nearly over. It's my daughter who has to live, and it's our task to keep all the forces of the kingdom away from her so that she has the chance to find her way to a safer world, and that she and that boy and their demons. And what about Mrs. Coulter? I would not have her troubled. Leave her alone. And protect her if you can. Although maybe I'm doing her an injustice. Whatever else she's done, she's never failed to surprise me. How whimsical of her, little
honestly,
lady.
Right? Why is he being
so dismissive?
Why is he being so dismissive? Why is he underestimating her when he knows the capability of Mrs. Coulter?
Mm-hmm. She literally just saved your child's life.
Yeah.
By like breaking into the Magisterium and like dismantling a bomb. So
yeah, fuck you, Asriel. Why is he such a fucking prick?
Honestly, so like he's like, but whatever else she's done, she's never failed to surprise me, but we all know what we've got to do. He brushes immediately past it. And this is the thing, it's like I can give him some credit for being like, our republic might have come into being for the sole purpose of helping her to do that, let us do it as well as we can. Like, my entire job, I never knew it might have been building this thing to help Lyra.
Yeah.
Great, love it. Take your role as a supporting cast member. Appreciate that. Love it. Why do you have to be mean to Coulter in the process? Why do you have to overlook the woman that helped you make that child, that did the majority of the labor in making that child, and is the only parent that seems to have given a shit about her, even if it is in a toxic, weirdly over-obsessive way?
Yeah. Like, honestly, I don't understand why he just seems to be so indifferent to almost the point of being slightly annoyed that she's there. Like, what? Fuck off.
Yeah. So weird.
And then we get to Mrs. Coulter in Asriel's bed, and I hate it when it's like, oh, she just wanted to hear his voice. Ugh, God.
Again, I'm choosing to view this as she is viewing him as her like closest link to Lyra, not that yeah. she just loves to hear the rumbling of his probably deep and very masculine voice.
Oh God, no. So Coulter thinks that they're all doomed. And then she hears everyone leave, so she goes in to talk to Azrael. The monkey and Stell are interesting in this mm-hmm. little exchange. You see, I guess, the vulnerability of Coulter, with, like, portrayed by the monkey. The monkey continuously keeps trying to, like, reach out to Stell, and Stell's not really having any of it. Stell's doing little growls, and she's, like, just sat really stoically, like, staring at Coulter. It's very interesting.
Yeah, Stell and Azrael have sometimes similar actions in this chapter and sometimes differing. And it's interesting to see, as always, to look at what the demon is doing as well as what the human is doing. Mm-hmm. Because I can't figure out in this little section if Azrael is a brick wall that gives nothing or if he's a good listener and is giving her the space she needs to say what she needs to say.
So I think it is a bit of both. I think at yeah. first it starts off like that when she's asking him questions and he's like, oh, you didn't hear us. She's like, what will happen to us all? And he's like, oh, you didn't hear. He still don't answer a question. Like, it's annoying. But then when she starts to talk a little bit more.
I hate the we should have married bit, I'll say.
Mm-hmm, oh, God, mm-hmm. yeah. We should have married and brought her up ourselves. It was such an unexpected remark that he blinked. His demon uttered the softest possible growl at the back of her throat and settled down with her paws outstretched in the manner of the Sphinx. He said nothing. Yeah, I also think that, but I see it because I fucking hate Azrael so much. I see it as Coulter just reaching to be like, we should have brought her up ourselves. If we'd have brought her up ourselves, none of this would have happened. She would have been with us. We could have protected mm-hmm. her rather than I love you, Azrael, and I want to marry you kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and again, this is the thing, now having James McAvoy in my head doing it, I can see his... it's such an unexpected remark that he blinked and his demon shuffled. It's kind of like a, could he be taken aback that because he'd just written Coulter off as like hating him and they've been somewhat enemies to lovers, lovers to enemies all this whole time. And there's always been this thing between them, but is it, isn't it? And like, is it taken aback there of like, did he just imagine that future? Is that kind of what he wants? And I can see James McAvoy delivering that perfectly.
Yeah.
Oh, James McAvoy. So. Sorry, not McAvoy. Everybody's favourite mispronunciation from me.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Because yeah. they did make Azrael much more vulnerable in the TV mm-hmm. show, from what we've seen so far anyway, because I can't remember if he gets any more vulnerable in the book.
Yeah.
But yes, I can see that happening. But also what you said about him, whether he's like just been stoic or whether he's been a good listener, I think at the point where she says... I can't bear the thought of oblivion, Azrael, she continued. Sooner anything than that. I used to think pain would be worse, to be tortured forever. I thought that must be worse. But as long as you were conscious, it would be better, wouldn't it? Better than feeling nothing, just going into the dark, everything going out forever and ever. His part was simply to listen. His eyes were locked on hers, and he was paying profound attention. There was no need to respond. So I think then he, like, shifts into being an actual good listener for once.
I was trying to figure out what prompted her to be having this existential moment here and whether it was, is it in relation to Lyra having let the ghosts out of the world of the dead? Is she saying she'd rather be in the world of the dead existing in that miserable place than turning into like atoms and dusting away like the demons do?
Yeah.
Or is it her contemplating something else like...
Yeah.
Even more abstract or even more like, yeah. Is she just generally feeling the like an impending sense of doom? Like,
yeah. I wonder whether it is what you said, because then that would make sense.
Or maybe if, this is the thing, like if she's not had the way the alethiometrist explained the ghosts being freed to Coulter was just like, and they just dissipate and turn into kind of nothing, what demons do. And so I can see Coulter viewing that as like oblivion and nothingness. Whereas like when to hear Lee describe it, it's like to be part of the world again, to be part of the trees, the grass, the air, the sea, everything.
Yeah.
And like, that sounds beautiful. Whereas, and again, that probably comes from the like her strict, like, initially like magisterium upbringing and ethos of like, if you've believed that there is a heaven and an eternal paradise, whatever, forever and ever, you finding out that getting turned into like trees and grass and whatever, it just feels like nothing by comparison, yeah. I guess. It's so against her ethos.
Yeah, true. Yeah, it could
and
be
so
her.
She's gone, cool, I thought heaven existed. Turns out it doesn't. Mm. Maybe I'd rather have the weird emptiness and purgatory and eternal torture that is the land of the dead than being dusted through a window. Yeah.
Could be her like church past coming back to be like, yeah, I get that. We get a little call back to Northern Lights, and I feel like I don't know if I'm just giving us credit when we didn't bring it up, but I feel like we did bring this up in Northern Lights. Mm-hmm. So the part where Sir Coulter says, I remember you said something strange on Svalbard, on the mountaintop just before you left our world. You said, come with me and we'll destroy dust forever. You remember saying that, but you didn't mean it. You meant the very opposite, didn't you? I see now. Why didn't you tell me what you were really doing? Why didn't you tell me you were really trying to preserve dust? You could have told me the truth. And he said, I wanted you to come and join me, his voice hoarse and quiet, and I thought you would prefer a lie. Yes, she whispered. That's what I thought. Interesting. Mm-hmm. This shows a teeny tiny 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 bit of vulnerability from Asriel to say that I wanted you to come with me, but in still being a dickhead, I lied to try and make that happen, because mm-hmm. selfishly I wanted you to drop everything that you were doing in this world to come with me because I wanted you there, and I'm willing to lie to get you to do that.
Yes. And also if you were choosing to view it in his vulnerability sense, you would be like, he didn't have enough confidence in his persuasive abilities to win her over to his cause. He felt he had to lie to get her on side.
True.
Like, that somewhat shows like an undermining of his own confidence there.
True.
I love the statement she makes immediately before that about how he spoke so bitterly about Lyra.
Mm.
The other day when you spoke about her so bitterly and about me, I thought you hated her. I could understand your hating me. I've never hated you, but I could understand. I could see why you might hate me, but I couldn't see why you hated Lyra. And like, I love that she's recognized that in him, because we've been recognizing that in him for a long time.
Yeah.
And the irrationality of hating a child is so truly beyond the pale.
Honestly.
It's like, yeah. And I kind of love that she recognizes that and kind of calls him out on it. And it's like, mm-hmm. this kid that I just half overheard you defending.
Yeah.
You put me under the impression that you hated her.
How could you hate a child, you fucking...
And that he doesn't have a response to that.
Yeah.
This is the thing, like, if I was Asriel in this situation, I feel like my response would be like, no, maybe he does hate her. I don't know. But I would feel that I had to defend myself on that. I'd be like, no, I didn't. I like, okay, yes, me and you have had a lot of really rough patches. There's reason for us to hate each other, but I could never hate my own child. I could never hate a child of any kind. Blah, 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 blah. But no, he doesn't. He has no response for it, because he probably, I don't know if he did hate her. I think he couldn't be accused of any feeling that strong. I think he was entirely indifferent for 100%. A very long time.
Yeah, absolutely. Apart from him listening to that to that bit, he then seems to like turn back on that, and just, she's trying to connect with him and he's just giving her absolutely nothing.
The monkey reaches out and touches Stell's paw, and it's like, oh. And again, I feel like the demons kind of do what they want to do. I think she wants to reach out for him and she can't, so the monkey's reaching for Stell.
Yeah. And then she asks him again, what will happen to us? Is this the end of everything? He said nothing. Moving like someone in a dream, she got to her feet, picked up the rucksack which lay in the corner of the room, and reached inside it for her pistol. And what she would have done next, no one knew, because at that moment there came a sound of footsteps running up the stairs. What is going on here? Why? My immediate thought is that she wants to kill herself.
Right?
Yeah.
I can't think of another clear reading. She's not got any clear motivation to want to hurt Asriel, and he's the only other person in the room, and she's just been speaking so profoundly about life and death,
and she doesn't know enough about, because we know she wasn't in the room when this conversation was going on, she doesn't know enough about the Clouded Mountain, she doesn't know enough about Metatron, about the Authority, about all these things that are an immediate threat to be like, right, I'm gonna go and fucking shoot him. Do you know what
and
I mean?
Like, join the fight in some way.
Yeah. It's very strange. Very, very strange.
Just, it feels like there's like a disparity between this statement, this little moment, and the rest of the chapter that it feels like it's kind of out of nowhere. And I can't put it together with my image of Mrs. Coulter. But maybe that's the point, is that she's so out of sorts. But then she's just found out her kid is alive. Like,
right,
I could see it if she thought Lyra was dead.
Yeah, same.
Because Lyra had become her main purpose in, like, life and, like, rescuing Lyra. And she's kind of half overheard this conversation where they've been talking about Lyra. Why Asriel's not said, hi, oh, you didn't overhear the conversation. New mission focus is all about our kid, by the way.
Yeah.
I feel like that would have given her the motivation she needed.
Yeah.
But, like, so it's really hard to figure out where she's at. Unless, to be honest, she knows that Lyra's in the Land of the Dead.
Yeah.
She could be like, cool, I'm going to go and see my kid.
It's so strange. I just wouldn't put that in her character at all.
Yeah.
At all. Part of me is like, I fucking wish she was just going to fucking shoot Asriel.
Oh, yeah. If she could have just done that, that would have been great.
Yeah.
Or like, I don't know, bungee jump out of the window and be like, Metatron, I'm coming for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Exactly.
But it's just not, it's not in line with the character for me. And it also feels like somewhat of a throwaway moment because of how fast everything changes.
Yeah.
Because the moment someone comes in, they've spotted two demons, they're cats, they're near the gate, let's go. It was really recent. And Asriel just completely changes and goes back to ignoring Mrs. Coulter and runs away. Runs out the door. Mm-hmm. Done. Mission's more important. This moment, who knows what was going to happen? Potentially, she's incredibly vulnerable right now, but he's fine with just flinging on his jacket and leaving the room.
Yeah.
While she's probably still stood there, pistol in hand, like.
Yeah. 100%.
Come on, man.
So there's an interesting part after this where we learn Mrs. Coulter's age.
Yes! I wrote this down. I was like, oh my God.
She is 35, which is so interesting to me because I am 31 and she is 4 years older than me.
Yeah.
Wow. Honestly, it's so funny, isn't it? Especially, I think, reading... I know that Phil would have a go at me for saying it's a children's book, but for reading like books that can also be read by children that a lot of people did read when they were children, even though I didn't read them when I was a kid, I feel like sometimes you still kind of, because a lot of the books so far have been from Lyra's perspective, you put yourself in Lyra's shoes. So I'm like, oh, Mrs. Coulter, she's an adult and she has no age. She's just a mysterious adult and they could be any age. And I was like, she's 35. She's actually pretty close to... how old
you're like, oh, she's mum age, so you're like, how old is my mum?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, okay, well, Lyra's younger than me, but you're still putting yourself in Lyra's shoes, so you're like, okay, so I picture Mrs. Coulter around like 45 probably.
Yes, me too. It's always in the 40s. Yeah,
or it's like, how old was your mum at when you were Lyra's age? And I think that was around, because my mum had me and my sister and she was like 32 and 35, so we would have been little babies. That means Mrs. Coulter had Lyra fairly young.
Yes.
How old do you think Lyra is? Is she about 12, 13?
So at this point, Lyra would be like, I guess 12, 13, right? So she would have had her when she was like 22, 23. She's young.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's like young enough to have gotten married.
But like, if you think about the timeline. Yeah, yeah. Like so young to get married, so young to then having an affair and have a kid. So she would have probably been married around like 20.
Mm-hmm.
And
then so young to be like establishing yourself in the magisterium while under a cloud of shame and a scandal of an affair, and like for that affair to have been swept under the rug enough, or like
but very interesting. I love when we find out like little bits of information like that,
like solid canon details.
I fucking love it. It's great.
But
then we also have this bit right at the end where her and the monkey are kind of like, we know what we have to do, and then they embrace, and again I'm like, what is going to happen here? What are they planning? Genuinely don't know.
No, it's kind of nice. I feel like perhaps this embrace, I mean, we'll find out, because I can't remember what happens in the next few chapters, but it feels like an equivalent moment of Mrs. Coulter like apologizing to the monkey in the TV series.
Because they
have quite an intense moment together in the TV series that I don't believe we get in the books, but could be wrong. Who knows? Spoiler zone is very misty when we get towards the end of the books, because it's so long since I've read them. Interesting. And the fact that we don't get to know what she does next, Again, like broken speech for Mrs. Coulter. She usually is very precise with her words, but she just says, "Very well, I can't see any other way. I think we'll." And he knew at once what she meant, leapt to her breast, and they embraced, and she found her fur-lined coat, and they very quietly left the chamber and made their way down the stairs. And it's like, but what are they doing?
Yeah,
to do exactly. What?
What is the plan? We don't know.
We don't know.
And
I genuinely can't remember what it is either.
No,
like,
me neither.
I remember where everything ends up. Can't remember how we get there.
No, me neither. Absolutely, I can't remember. But yeah, that's the end of that chapter.
What a place to end. Very cliffhangery. We found the demons. Asriel's been rude all chapter. A big battle's happening. Well, about to happen.
Yeah.
It's a very everything is coming to a head situation. But
absolutely.
Some very interesting like character moments for everybody. We're seeing a side of Coulter we hadn't seen before. We're seeing some other sides to Asriel.
Yes. And we're seeing like hints of other sides of Asriel, I think.
We're seeing hints of Asriel that really like a Gunway, and I'm into that.
Oh, yeah, I'm into that. I'm into that. Maybe that's the one thing I like about Asriel.
Yeah.
It's something that we've made up. Love it.
Yes.
Love it.
Look, I just appreciate when someone can hold their friend's face very gently and just stare into their eyes and talk very intensely.
Yeah, me too.
About why angels are jealous of all of their flesh. That's what he said, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what he said.
Yes.
What is the name of the next chapter?
The Battle on the Plain.
Oh, yeah, he said that earlier.
Yeah.
I don't want to judge a chapter by its name, but you know me, if it is very battle heavy, I don't think I'm going to enjoy it that much. But if it's battle heavy, but it's still kind of focused on like Lyra and Will, then maybe I'll be all right with it.
I guess we'll find out. It's going to be a lot of logistics, I guess, of like various forces meeting, fighting, blah, blah, blah. And that's not my jam, but hopefully some nice character moments in there as well.
Yeah.
We'll see.
So. We will see.
Ooh. Hey, Faye. Do you have any awards to give out this week? Who is your award for?
Oh, yes, I nearly forgot about this. My award is for the orderly that didn't ignore Mrs. Coulter and brought her some food.
Nice.
He's the only person that did not ignore her.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What about you?
I'm going to go for the alethiometrist.
Oh, yes.
We've only met a few alethiometrists in our time. We've got Lyra. We've got Fra Parvel, I believe we've met. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of it. We've not met Asriel's alethiometrist before.
Nope.
So it's nice to meet another member of the gang.
True. And they're very helpful and they seem nice.
Yeah, actually gave Mrs. Coulter the information she'd been asking for bloody hours from Asriel. So,
And I hope that he got a rest.
I really hope he got to have a nap.
Yeah.
Poor man with his lovely nightingale demon.
Yeah. Oh.
I hope she sings him a little song to help him get to sleep.
So we can think about death.
Yeah, so we can all get melancholy.
So, before we leave today, before we finish the episode, we wanted to remind everyone that we have new merch.
Yeah.
We have those t-shirts, the mugs, and the list pads that we mentioned at the beginning of the episode. We also have all the t-shirts that we have ever put out are still up there too. So if you wanted to get something from the older collections or like stickers and stuff like that, bookmarks, they're all there. So yeah, it really does help to support us. We run the merch shop completely by ourselves. So yeah, if you can't afford to become a patron or you don't want to, but you still want to support the podcast, buying merch is a great way to do that. And you can find it at hdmpod.co.uk/shop.
Yes. Yeah. Yay. Come buy some merch. I'm wearing my alethiometer t-shirt right now.
Yeah.
And it's very cool. It's got all the alethiometer symbols on it. It's got a bunch of demons hidden on it. We've got a spyglass. We've got balloon dad balloons. We've got bear dad bears. We got a subtle knife. It's got everything on it. It's a good t-shirt.
It's
and then the
t-shirt.
New t-shirts are really cool. They've got all the hero props on. Really just wear them. I feel like we've done quite a good job. I will toot our own horn and say of making merch that is like a little bit subtle.
Yes.
I think at least subtle bit of merch is the Big C Energy t-shirt, which this has been not quite the Big C Energy chapter. She's not been stomping priests like we like to see her doing.
True.
But yes, that's another great one with our fave LMP on the front. Go check it out. We've got some good stuff.
We have.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Her Dark Materials. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at HDMPod, and you can email us at herdartmaterialspod@gmail.com. You can also visit our website at hdmpod.co.uk.
If you want to support us, you can become a patron at patreon.com/HDMPod. We also have a shop where you can buy merch featuring all original artwork from Rich. You can find it at hdmpod.co.uk/shop. I'm Fair, and when I'm not livid about Azrael, you can find me talking about Paramore on my other podcast, Still Into You. You can listen wherever you get your podcasts and find us on Twitter and Instagram at Still Into You Pod.
I'm Rachel, and when I'm not here gently cupping face as I talk to her about how strong we all are compared to the angels, I'm making cute and magical arty things. You can find me over on Instagram at RachMakes, on Twitter and TikTok at Rach_makes, and over in my online shop, rachmakes.co.uk. The theme music for the podcast was written and produced by Johnny Knott.
We'll see you in 2 weeks' time, and don't forget,
keep telling stories,
and all will be well. Fuck you, Azrael, forever and always.
Someone give Coulter and the monkey a cuddle as well. I feel like they need it this chapter.
Absolutely.